Welcome to the Purse Podcast. My name is Jana Hlistova, and we are changing the conversation for women about money and investing. I'm super excited about my guests today, Grace O'Brien and Sam Rowlands. Grace O'Brien is an award-winning creative director at AKQA, an international creative and innovation agency. Over the last 10 years, Grace has worked with global clients such as Volvo, TikTok, Nike, and Jordan. Her work has been recognized by Cannes Lion, the WARC Awards, Fast Company, the London Design Museum, the Earthshot Prize, and more. Beyond the creative industry, Grace is an accomplished scholar with an academic background in economics and a passion for climate action and gender equality. In addition to building Pink Chip with colleague and founder Sam Rowlands, Grace leads communications for Generation Climate Europe, the region's largest coalition of youth-led networks pushing for stronger climate action, and advises UN-led women's economic inclusion projects in the Global South. Sam Rowlands is a multi-awarded creative lead and art director at AKQA. She has worked with many local and global clients such as Gucci, Nike, Toyota, and Tourism Australia, just to name a few. Her work has been recognized on the world stage, including at the Cannes Lion, D&AD, the One Show, and Webby's. With a wealth of experience, Sam has also served as a judge at leading award shows across many categories, including creative excellence, innovation, and visual storytelling. Beyond her professional accomplishments, Sam mentors numerous female creatives, offering guidance and support in navigating the male-dominated industry. As the visionary founder of Pink Chip, an investment initiative challenging investor bias against female leaders, Sam is dedicated to enlightening businesses and investors about the economic power of having women at the helm. The launch of Pink Chip and its US index on International Women's Day in partnership with UN Women has delivered exceptional performance. Backdated for over 3 years, the Pink Chip US index has outpaced US benchmarks like the S&P 500 by over 80%. Featured on Bloomberg and in renowned publications such as Forbes, this milestone marks just the beginning of Pink Chip's journey toward challenging bias against female leaders. Sam has been on the path to creating Pink Chip for over 4 years. Now, in this podcast interview, we talk about the launch of Pink Chip, which is an investment initiative challenging investor bias against female leaders. We talk about why we need it, the journey to get here. We discuss the criteria used to include companies in this index, how it's performed compared to traditional indices, the impact on promoting gender diversity and inclusion, what's next for Pink Chip, and what companies do to be included. I hope you enjoy this podcast interview as much as I did. Please note that this podcast interview is for informational purposes only. We do not provide investment advice. All right, well, Sam and Grace, welcome to the show. It's great to have you both on today. I've picked up a quote from your website, and it says, "There's a bias against women in business, and it's our mission to reverse it." Can you explain what this bias is and how this relates to female leaders in business?
There's a study that was conducted, and what they found was whenever a female CEO is publicly appointed, the stocks actually drop 2-3%. And they concluded in the study that it was specifically because of bias, because when you look at the metrics and the stats of female leadership and what they present when leading a company, they actually outperform the typical benchmarks and their competitors. So it sort of just shows that people do latch on to the concept of gender when all of these things are publicized and when looking through, I suppose, the media. So that's essentially what the bias is, and it makes no sense.
It makes no sense. So basically, if you have a woman step into the role of a CEO of a publicly listed company, the stock price goes down by 2%. Is that right?
2-3%.
2-3%. Okay.
I will clarify, it's sometimes, and the study makes the point that there's a little bit of a correlation between how public that appointment is. So if the company puts a lot of media or sort of fanfare around that appointment and that announcement, the stronger the negative market reaction is. So that's also a problem, because mm-hmm. it means then that female CEOs sort of don't get their moment in the light when they're appointed. Mm-hmm. And then they're already on the back burner from sort of day one, and their immediate priority is to recover some damage to the company's share price. So there's an interesting relationship between how publicized female leadership is and the negative reaction to it. And I think it's really telling that all of us could probably name drop at least, you know, five male CEOs of publicly listed companies, and you would probably struggle to do the same for female-led ones. And that just shows how different, there's very few sort of rock star level, Musk level female CEOs, because it's actually better to keep everything on the down low.
I didn't know that. I didn't know that the more a female CEO was publicized, the more the backlash or the pushback. But again, it speaks to the bias. It speaks to gender bias. Because I guess if you are pushing against gender norms, right, and we do in the sort of traditional sense, stereotypically, when we talk about a leader, a CEO, 9 times out of 10 or 10 times out of 10, people think of a man, not a woman. So a female CEO is essentially breaking the gender norm, isn't it?
And there's other things that also like are so exhausting and frustrating to read when these female leaders are publicized. The write-ups from journalism, 80% of them will include their marriage status, mm-hmm. whether they're mothers or not, and all of these gendered tidbits,
yeah,
which make absolutely zero sense or zero relevancy when you're talking about your job. And when they looked and cross-referenced that with how much male CEOs had to deal with that, it was like next to none. Like it was mm-hmm. a very, very small percent that even referenced their outside work life.
Now, I want to talk about the Pink Index. Sam, am I right that you came up with the idea, or did you both come up with the idea?
We were always connected with the idea from way back, but no, I came up with the idea about 5 years ago, but it was for a competition. And Grace was actually one of the leaders in the competition and like the mentors in the competition. So when I came up with the idea, I originally told Grace for this comp 4.5, 5 years ago, roundabout. Yeah, and we actually weren't working together then. And then fast track, 4 years later, we started working together. And I repitched it right back at her.
I think the idea has evolved, which is one of the great things about ongoing collaboration, right? Is that things can evolve. And that's been one of the great joys of this project as well, is to see it. When you look at the original notes and drawings of what it was and compare it to what it is now, it's quite astonishing how much work has gone into it and how much it's changed for the better.
And I want to hear all about that. But can you, first of all, explain what it is and why did you think it was important to launch this initiative?
The Pink Chip is focusing on female-led businesses and essentially benchmarking them against competitors and also key benchmarks like the S&P 500 to just prove how economically powerful female leadership is and how much this bias is hurting not only us as women, but also investors and the economy itself. So it started as a, I suppose, an educational standpoint to really prove this point and showcase to everyone. And so what we've done is we've built it out and created an index that's literally tracking 44 female-led US public listed companies and benchmarking them against the S&P 500 and the male equivalent of the criteria to show how much better they're doing, to really help people to focus on numbers and not so much the bias and gender when they're thinking about investment.
And that's key, right? Because I think when we were developing this, one thing we realized was you can't just tell people about their bias. You have to find a language that's common to them. And we're trying to change investor behavior. And to do that, you need to talk in their language. You need to talk in terms of profit and performance and be data driven. And so what we've done is really visualize the power of female leadership. And it's really hard to argue when it's there in a format that they're familiar with. What makes Pink Chip so powerful is the message is provocative, but the actual experience on the product itself is it's a graph and it's a bunch of numbers and a list of companies that prove the power of female leadership and why bias is costing you money. And we should all care about that, even if you're not a big institutional investor, or if you're just someone who invests as a hobby, you've probably got a pension fund, some sort of retirement thing, or everyone's connected to the stock market in some way. So if bias is eroding a lot of value from portfolios that make a difference in your everyday life, then that's something we can really change with tools like this.
Mm-hmm. So I can check the Pink Chip Index daily, and that will show me how it's performing against the S&P 500.
Yeah, the S&P, and also TM Large, which is, we've pulled together a similar list of companies that utilize the same criteria as the Pink Chip, aside from having a female CEO,
okay,
just so that it's clear just how well it's performing.
Amazing. And I literally go to your website,
pinkchip.org,
and that's where I can see the performance. Brilliant. We're going to talk more about it, but I do want to hear about the journey from where you started to launch. I know it wasn't straightforward, Sam. I know it's been quite a journey. You've had to persevere, very committed to it. By the way, I'm super impressed and super proud of what you have done. And I absolutely love this initiative. I think it's super important. But tell us about the beginning and how you've made it to where you are today.
Yeah, it's been quite a mission and requires a lot of grit. And it also requires a lot of people around you that support and believe in the same things you believe in. Like, that's essential. But yeah, it's been quite a journey. So to backtrack, my actual role is an art director or a creative lead in advertising or media. And so essentially what I'm meant to do is come up with ideas that either solve business problems or help a business launch a product or rebrand themselves. And then sometimes you get an opportunity to come up with an idea that solves a real world problem, which is the super exciting moments. So for example, for the brief for this particular moment in the competition I was doing, it was, how do you get more women to invest? Mm-hmm. Because typically women put their money in a bank account, whereas men will put it in investment. And that kind of annoyed me because I personally invest. My
I'm glad invests. It annoyed you, Sam. I'm glad it did. It annoys me too.
Yeah, just the brief itself. I was like, oh. Anyway, and also typically women are better investors. Anyway, that's a different stat. So to sort of challenge the brief that I got, instead, I made one idea that was basically a giant FU to the brief. And then I then came up with this one, which came from the idea that women are more likely to invest in what they know, trust, and aligns to their personal goals or their goals of what they believe is right morally. So, for example, climate change. By creating a category of female-led companies to invest in was my goal, and then put it on an investing app instead of a tech category, a female category, and allowing people to invest like that. So all in good, we went quite well with this idea in the competition itself. But coming out of that, it was one of those ideas that I couldn't drop. It needed to be made. Like, it wasn't just like something for competition. You're like, cool, won that. The end, off I go onto my job of rebranding some conglomerate. So
you want to change the world, Sam.
Well, it was just so sticky, and it was such an obvious thing. Like, it's just, why doesn't it exist already is the thing. And it just really stuck with me. And my bosses at the time also loved it. And so we pitched it to the company it was for, and they loved it. But nothing ever happened. All of these things were all constantly a bit too hard or not the right time. And then I pitched it again to another company, and it was the same thing. Too hard, not the right time. We've got a new MD. I pitched it to another one again. Like, and all of these versions of me pitching the idea is me selling the idea to them. Like, here is something that is amazing and you should have and you should make, and it will make you a lot of money. And I just think it should exist.
How many times did you pitch it to companies?
Around about 5 times.
Mm-hmm.
Places that definitely have the capital to do this kind of stuff. And yeah, every time it just kind of either, I'm sure at the time of pitching it, everyone was like, yes, I believe in this, but then maybe it ruffled feathers down the line and therefore it got dropped, or you never really know. You just kind of get, oh, this isn't right anymore, sorry. And so I suppose that was a a bit of a blow to the gut constantly, but at the same time, I wouldn't drop it. I wouldn't exactly call it fire, but it sort of was just one of those things where I just constantly slogged and talked to people and kept trying. And then that's honestly when Grace and I picked it up again when I got here at AKQA. Mm-hmm. And, you know, still was like, we should still do this. Like, this should be made. Who have we got within the network? And then you pitch it again to someone else. And then it again doesn't get launched. So then Grace reached out to Thematic to see if they, which is an indice, a financial calculator. And they were like, yeah.
And you're working with them on this. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. They're mm-hmm. one of our partners. And they were like, we love this.
Amazing.
Let's do it. And then that mm-hmm. kind of gave us the momentum or the moment of like, actually, screw it. We're doing it ourselves. If no one's going to do it and they're not going to let us make it for their company, we're going to make it ourselves and we're just going to see how it goes.
Tremendous freedom in that decision as well, because when you're pitching something to a potential client or partner, you have to do it with consideration of what their service is or their app or whatever that you're trying to integrate PinkChip in. So you have a little less control over the shape of the idea, right? Whereas it was actually really freeing at some point when we just went, you know what, if we believe this should be made, then let's just go and do it ourselves. It then meant that we could think beyond creating a category within someone else's app to a totally different financial tool and product.
And keeping the name and whatnot as well.
Yeah, and think about what's actually best to solve the problem. And I think in our industry anyway, the idea of doing something without a client or a backer is almost unheard of. And to get partners on board when we're like, yeah, we have no money to do this, you would have to just help because you believe in the idea, is, you know, also a tough thing to do. But I think in the end, for solving the problem that we wanted to address, this market bias, like actually deciding not to pitch it out anymore and to just make it ourselves was probably the best decision we made, I think, at that point in time.
100%.
It's essentially like a startup. You came up with this idea, you created a business, in inverted commas. I mean, you know, and you're going to talk more about how you're going to evolve this initiative. I can totally understand. Initially, you thought, I'm going to pitch this to a financial services company. Of course, they're going to love this. It's so obvious. We're going to give the idea to them and hopefully they'll just run with it. And then the realization that, yeah, probably, possibly wasn't a priority or wasn't the right time, as you said, Sam. And then you come around to, look, if we don't do this, it probably won't get done. I mean, you know, you had 1, 2, 3, 4, however many years of no one else making this real. And you see this a lot with female founders, female entrepreneurs. They get to a point where it's like, I've got to do this myself. Like, just this is the only way it's going to happen. And actually, you want to do it your way as well.
Exactly. Like, there was one time that I pitched it, and it was on International Women's Day that I pitched it, and I had everybody crying in the room, like tears of empowerment, essentially.
Yeah.
And still, and like, so, yeah. And so it's kind of one of those things where you have to do it yourself sometimes. But I think it's so important when you do decide, or when it becomes obvious that the only way to get it done is doing it yourself, is to surround yourself with your tribe. Mm-hmm. Like, you've got to have your people around you. You can't surround yourself with people that are just like, oh, yeah, I guess. Like, you have to all be 100% the people that you can trust, that you can talk to or whinge to or stress out in front of and be unsure in front of and be vulnerable and be able to devil's advocate, question each other. Like, you need to be able to surround yourself with these people in order to get anywhere with, I think, startup or ideas or anything that you want to do yourself. Because otherwise, I don't know how people do it solo. Like, it'd be excruciating.
Because it's so hard. It's so difficult. And you've introduced a concept which is so new in the financial services sector. And so that there's just a lot going on here. Even though starting your own initiative or your own startup is essentially much more difficult, it's easier in other ways because you're not banging your head against the wall and waiting for a financial services company to say yes, okay, and then they'll
we'll do only a little bit, or we'll just do it this way.
We control the narrative as well. Yeah. I think it's key, because one thing that I've realized when reflecting back on how many people we've pitched this to and over the years, and even now when we still talk to interested parties and potential partners, there's sometimes a tendency to pigeonhole pink chip into the space of DEI, you know, mm-hmm. that it's a gender mm-hmm. initiative. Mm-hmm. Companies can say and pontificate as much as they like about how important DEI is to them when it comes to investing capital, resources, time, putting things into roadmaps, getting it done. It's very low priority. So by actually doing it ourselves, we position PinkChip as not a moral, nice to have, cool women for women project, but an actual, to your point, startup in and of itself and a product and a useful tool that's got nothing to do with sort of like girl boss energy that maybe corporates want to position it as internally for their own benefit. So
yeah,
the control there is also really, really important.
And I think also there's so many interesting layers where we're not a financial company. So being able to tackle this as a story-led and narrative-led initiative as well, we don't have to tap it into something we're already doing, I think is quite interesting. It's quite lovely to be able to have such a brand story, which is what we do, attached to this to influence and encourage people to look it up and read it. And it's not just an indice within a website, within a greater financial reasoning company. So I think that's something that's really strong with what we're doing.
That's a great point, actually. And I think it's actually a big driver of what has made PinkChip successful. You know, because there are other index products on the market that track gender, or if not just women CEOs, but you know, the board diversity or diversity of a company as a total. So from a methodology point of view, it is not 100% novel, but what is novel is the storytelling around it, the branding, as Sam was saying, like PinkChip is a brand and a platform as well as a product. And that part of the mission is advocacy, right? And raising awareness and getting people to change behavior. And I think that part of it is also been why it's resonated with so many people. And that's our core skill set. You know, we're not, we don't work in finance. We're not traders or anything. We're storytellers. So that's, I think, where we start to see as well how powerful storytelling can be.
And actually, this is exactly what the financial services sector has to get better at, because they struggle to connect to female investors, right? To women, to female customers. And you've actually demonstrated how to communicate in a way that is conducive to the female customer and female investor.
Yeah, I suppose like how Grace was talking about the DEI comment, that's the other thing. Like, we're not doing this for a it's better for the world, be nice thing that's amongst other products and whatever. It's more profitable. So it is just a powerful thing. Yeah, exactly. So it's proving the power of women without doing this whole, oh, look at you go, like attitude, or sort of this like, oh, look, we're doing a gender lens investing thing because we're the good guys. Like, no, it makes money.
Yeah.
Invest.
And we're very careful as well to not alienate men in that conversation. So the tone of how we speak and what we say, we're really intentional about for that reason. And it's been an interesting journey to go on with partners like UN Women, right, who are famous for their advocacy of women around the world. But we've had conversations with them about, like, we don't need to convince other women of our value and our skills and our competencies. It's the reality is most of the investors at hobby level, but institutional level, are men.
Yeah.
And we need to not just be in an echo chamber of either DEI advocates or other women furiously agreeing with each other, but actually start to talk outwards as well. What makes it so great is, like, this is going to sort of sound a little bit awful maybe, but you could be a misogynist and think women make terrible CEOs and whatever, but if your objective is to make money, then still invest in them because they have great returns and they're really solid investments in and of their own right. You know, like Advanced Micro Devices, I don't care if you agree with me that you think their CEO is a pioneer in her field. If you want to make money, that's the bottom line. So trying to appeal to people's business goals or their performance metrics or whatever it is, rather than trying to convince them of the inherent importance and value of women and equality, which is way harder to do, actually, than here's a way you can make money. It's kind of like tricking people into doing feminist things
without calling it feminist or making it
exactly
about feminism, but it is. Yeah. Mm. Yeah. Really, really great point. In terms of the criteria then that's used to include the companies in the index, can you talk us through that? I guess this is where working with your partner Thematic comes in. And also, can you share a few examples of companies that you've included in the index and why were they chosen?
So the index has like three main criteria. The first one is obviously that their CEO identifies as female. The second is that they have a market cap of at least $2 billion and they're listed on a US exchange. Mm-hmm. The reason for that is purely just to, we say, constrain the universe of the index. If we had no market cap, it would be, there's just so much data that we manually have to sift through in order to create a product like this. So it just helps us sort of constrain things a little bit. We also look at length of tenure and compounding annual growth. So we have different weightings and treat include companies that have at least 8% of compounding growth over 3 years. And that's a criteria we get asked about a lot, but it's an important one because we're trying to control for something called the glass cliff effect, which is a phenomenon that we notice when a company is going through a rough patch. Let's say they've had class action lawsuits or product recalls or something disastrous has happened. You often see that a woman gets appointed as a CEO or COO or something. I use Under Armour as an example, or more recently, Boeing, I think, is a good example of this, right? And then what you see is those women will be in charge for maybe about 2 years, and then they get things back on track. And then they'll get replaced by a man again. We want to try to find a way to exclude companies that have appointed a woman, not because they believe in female leadership, but because of some sort of extenuating circumstances. And developing that methodology it took a fair while. Thematic was a mm-hmm. fantastic partner mm-hmm. through that process. Mm-hmm. And like I said, that process of actually creating the data is really quite a manual one. So we start with like a massive list of all of the companies that are listed on US exchanges, filter them by size. Then we've got to identify who their CEO is, fact check their how they identify gender-wise, and then apply all of the other metrics that I mentioned. There is no easy way to do that. There's no automated way to do that. So that's just a huge, gnarly spreadsheet. It's a lot of work and people putting in a lot of time and detail to attention to end up with, at the end, 44 companies.
After thousands and thousands.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, I think globally now it's 7% of publicly listed companies have female CEOs. So the pool is already really small. So when you start to try and apply some rigorous methodology to it, it's natural that you wouldn't have loads of companies, but I honestly 44 I feel like I was surprised that we even have that many. And there are some incredible companies in there. I mentioned AMD, Advanced Micro Devices, is one of them, mm-hmm. the fantastic female leader. But what I think is interesting as well is there's some household names in the index, but also some companies you would have never heard of, but when you look into their story and the story of their CEO, they're super inspiring. So part of this for us as well is surfacing those companies and those women. Mm-hmm. That's roughly the sort of methodology and how it came together. It's a really like laborious process. And we're so grateful for people like Thematic to help us out with that.
Am I right in thinking that over time, the number of companies in the index should actually go up?
It's one of our goals to change. Also to encourage investors to look at the numbers and not the bias, to then hopefully influence business decisions based on investors, because businesses typically will look at what investors want and the how well the money's tracking rather than what potentially a better decision would be. So it's kind of twofold with how we want to influence that change and rise it from 7%.
That's the hope. The number also hasn't changed a great deal over time. I think maybe 20 years ago, it was probably 2%. So progress is there. It's just really slow. Mm. And I think, as Sam said, it is our goal. One of our sort of own KPIs, I guess, is to increase the number of female-led publicly listed companies. But there's so many, that in itself is such a, there's so many things we don't control in that. Yeah. That's
even just creating, like, as you were saying, the list of female-led companies, there's no open data source to look through that. Like, there's the Forbes 100 or the Forbes top 30, and there's just kind of the really highly publicized ones. Mm-hmm. Beyond that, there's no way of finding these companies for retail investors. If you're someone that invests directly in a company, you'd have to do the literal Googling, LinkedIn checking, hunting, searching. And some companies really hide in like the background of the footer of like who is leading the companies.
Right.
So even to surface that as a way for people to see what companies are led by women, I think is also really powerful. Yeah, beyond the 10 that we know maybe at best.
So you've literally, you and your partner Thematic, you literally had to manually go through this process of searching on Google, going to the company's website, checking on LinkedIn, and God knows where else.
Cross-checking that with their financials. At one point, they produced a script that was predicting the gender of CEOs based on their names. Fascinating, the results of that. It doesn't really cope well with non-Western names. So it sort of immediately renders all the results into question because you're like, well, now we've got to check everyone.
Yeah.
We even tried to use some AI tools to help us with that. It was amazing to me, like even going into Google and typing like, who is the CEO of X company? And it would often give me the incorrect answer. It would tell me, oh, it's John Smith. And actually, it's a woman.
Mm.
And I don't know how that works, but there's a bias in all of these tools. So in the end, we were like, actually, we've just got to do this manually because we're now having to control for the bias that's in AI or in other predictive things. So yeah,
that's a whole other podcast.
A whole other podcast. Yeah. So yeah, it was Thematic, us, some of our interns at the time. Yeah, it was a big project.
Well, luckily, when you're a publicly listed company, you have to supply who your CEO is. And so there was a lot of, I think I got the premium of LinkedIn just to make sure that I could go through people's LinkedIns and double check who they were with photos. But yeah, so that was quite interesting.
Yeah. Well, thank goodness you did that. You put in the manual effort that was required, but you've actually just described a massive challenge within tech, within AI, and how you're forging the path in an area that's just so unexplored and hasn't really been invested into. In terms of performance, I just want to dig into this a little bit. Can you talk to us about what we're seeing in terms of performance of the Pink Chip Index compared to traditional indices and any other stats you'd like to share around this in terms of performance?
I've got the actual numbers here of how the Pink Chip is currently tracking. So over 3 years, it has an increase of over 45%, which mm-hmm. is over 11% above the benchmarks, which is at the moment the S&P 500 and also the male-led companies.
Mm-hmm.
So that's 3 years. But if you look at the 4 years, it's 172.07% increase, which is over 80% outperformance of the two benchmarks that I mentioned.
That is very
good.
Which
is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel obligated to say, like, as an economist, past performance is not an indicator of future performance. But what I think is interesting is when you do look at that longer time period, right, 3 years to 4 years, Pink Chip is an incredibly strong performer. These women-led companies have consistent high growth. Obviously, if you were to look day-to-day, or hour to hour, or even week to week, the picture looks a little bit different. But the average person is holding on to shares for a few years, right? That's the idea, is you put your money into it and you wait it out. So that's, for me, is where it gets interesting, is the consistency in the performance of women-led companies over a really long period of time. That's such a powerful thing to be able to visualize. When you see the difference in volume and growth between Pink Chip and its benchmarks, it's like, it's not to say that the benchmarks dive or perform poorly. It's just their performance is just at a lower rate of growth. So yeah, it's fascinating to play around with the time lengths on the website as well. Yeah.
And this is also with the Magnificent Seven and in the last year where they've had an absolute boom.
Mm.
And so they're all led by men. So even, you know, you've got to take that into account,
mm-hmm.
you know, these particular companies that are in an absolute bull market moment. So, you know, it depends on how the year's going.
I mean, they're super powerful statistics. The numbers speaks for themselves. Why do you think that female CEOs outperform?
There's a few studies that showcase that women outperform in general in multiple areas. One is leadership style. I think with Harvard Business Review did a study to pull out what the key leadership styles are, and women actually outperform 17 out of 19 in comparison to men. So I think the retention of staff is higher in women. Women are statistically more likely to pay women within their business more equal to men. But I think also, I think it was at the accounting studies documented that women are 40% more likely to have accurate earnings calls than men.
Mm-hmm.
So all of these things ladder up together to just create these very dumbfoundingly amazing stats on like female performance and how they really focus their energy within their roles of as CEOs.
Mm-hmm.
I think what that Harvard Business Review study surfaces, which is really fascinating, is that women have really strong interpersonal skills. So they're better at building relationships and encouraging collaboration and building teams and empowering people. I really think that's the point of difference. You can imagine how that leads to better productivity, better decision-making, better risk management even. It was something that we had asked actually of Edwina Dunn, who is an incredible female CEO herself with a long track record in business. We asked her sort of what had made her successful as a female CEO, and she actually cited that it was her ability to basically build really good teams and then take a step back. So not lead from the front, but actually build good teams and empower people
mm-hmm.
and keep them engaged and keep them on track. And I think that is such a difference in how women think about leadership or the way that women lead versus men.
Yeah, really, really important. Less about ego and trying to portray yourself always as the leader, but more yeah. about building a team and enabling your team, I guess, to be the best they can be, stepping back, allowing them to do that.
I think people don't talk about this enough, but there's a huge difference between the patriarchy and the matriarchy and how those communities function. Like, we obviously know what the patriarchy does. It's the dude at the top, and it's a triangular structure, people underneath. When you look at a matriarchy and how that community would function, it's circular. And so everyone is pitching in and doing something together, and it's all in like building a tribe, as I said before, and creating this ecosystem of being able to step back and not have to be the person at the top constantly and trusting the people around you to also drive the ship forward. And I think that's, in my view, the key difference,
yeah.
exactly how Grace was saying.
Absolutely. I also think that it is much more difficult for women to get to the top. So in addition to what we've just talked about, I think they have to be exceptional and they have to develop their interpersonal skills so much more because there's so many more barriers and systemic biases. We need to build a society and a business where you can be very good, but you don't need to be exceptional. It shouldn't be so difficult to get there. Mm.
There's something that I really liked. I think Meryl Streep said it, like how or why she has been able to be who she is and go through the process of business and that the industry that she's in. And she was saying that women know how to talk men. Like mm-hmm. you have to. mm-hmm, we know yeah. how to talk to men and we know how to talk to women, whereas men just talk men.
Yeah.
They've never required to learn how to speak to women and how to encourage women or people that maybe learn or function differently. As women, we constantly have to alter and tend and sort of manage personalities mm-hmm. Or egos. So I think that's also something that would create a more holistic view of a leader.
Yeah, yeah. Great example.
I think this is why in retention of women in the workforce is really key as well as to part of this is completely agree. It shouldn't be so hard to get to the top. It also shouldn't require you to be someone that you're not. You know, that there's, I think there's a, we're told that in order to be successful at the top of business, you need to be a go-getter, you need to be really aggressive, and you need to lean in, and you need to do this, and you need to do that. Men don't get told that. Men, all they have to do is show up with their CV and their track record of things they've done. They don't have to change who they are to be considered a leadership candidate. I think we need to change and make space for women to lead and be who they are. And that's totally not something we see a lot of organizations doing. Yeah. And again, this would be a whole other podcast, but also looking at things like parental leave. How do you actually create space for women to play the multiple roles that we are expected to play in life and still succeed? You know, it's, so much of this is like really deep cultural, structural stuff that organizations need to look at in order to create a pipeline of female leaders.
There was one thing on the retention of women, which I think Halima was saying to us, Grace, she had witnessed, and this is crazy, she's witnessed multiple times when women go on maternity leave or go on holidays, their handover is so ensuring that everybody knows what to do, where it is, how to do it, everything is on track, not a blip in the system. When they get back, they are actually let go because it is presumed that they weren't required because their handover was so exemplary.
I've not actually heard that. That's,
isn't that insane?
It's insane.
Because they can create a team that can function without them, as we were saying, the circular matriarchy.
So they're doing their job really well.
Yeah, well. And instead of seeing the value in that, going, actually, do we need her? Things are fine without her, it appears. Yeah.
So conversely, do men not put together a good handover, and so no one can make any sense of what needs to get done? So chaos ensues and they need the person to come back.
Maybe that's the key. Maybe we're doing this wrong. You actually need to create chaos so that you remain relevant.
Yeah. Oh, God. My personal pet hate is, I'm sure you both know about this, is the fact that men get promoted on potential, women get promoted on experience. On average, I think it takes, 6 years or so for a woman to get promoted based on her experience. We need to believe in women's competence, ability. We need to stop undervaluing their work and what they're going to achieve. So all of this stuff needs to change. And we need leaders who are very cognizant of the biases and these issues that are inherent in company culture and just more broadly socially.
It's so true. I mean, just to reference Boeing and what's happened there recently, I was reading, and I shared this with Sam, because the rhetoric around her, the appointment, I believe her name is Stephanie Pope, to senior leadership has been very interesting to watch. So she is someone who has spent decades leading various different divisions within the company and has had a great track record running various aspects of that business and has now been put in charge of rebuilding the company, and particularly it's the beleaguered engineering side. And it's fascinating to see journalists and commentators go, oh yeah, she's been in the company for ages, star performer, even though she's a little bit under the radar. She's not one of the company's most high profile execs, but she's been there for ages, great track record. Oh, but she hasn't done this exact job before. So there's question marks around her ability to lead and what it's going to do to the company, and a lot of criticism about she doesn't have the right experience. Totally to your point, that rather than looking at her potential based on what she has achieved.
Yeah, we're questioning.
We're questioning her experience, even though we're also a bit able to recognize she has got a lot of relevant experience. So I think that it's just so fascinating to see that sort of exactly what you're talking about play out in the media all the time.
All the time. And I have to say, I really don't like what I continue to see on a daily basis in terms of how the media write about this stuff. 9 times out of 10, the editor is male. They're doing women and female leaders a disservice, a massive disservice.
Massively. They really focus and highlight all of these other performative things that are expected of women rather than their capabilities. When you read the articles based on male leadership, they're very factual. They're just kind of like, he did this, he's done that, like, he's going to take
this. Very unemotional. Yeah.
Yeah, and they just kind of are definitely, it's that clickbait issue and perpetuating the gender lens on these women that are progressing and being amazing. But no, let's not, we can't look at that. We can't look at how amazing they're being. Discuss if they've got two kids or three.
But on that point as well, it's amazing to see sometimes the discourse on the other end of the extreme. You see coverage about female CEOs, but it's also, she's incredible, she's a mom, and she runs ultra marathons to raise money for this, and she's on the board of this, and she's incredible, and she's president of the universe. And it's perpetuates again this stereotype that in order to be a female leader or an exceptional leader, you also have to just be an exceptional person in every sphere of your life, instead of just going, she's really good at this job.
Yeah.
And here are her achievements in this job. You have to be some sort of superstar persona in order to be interesting. So it's either you're not good enough or you're the best person who's ever lived.
Ever lived. You're almost like you have to be a freak of nature, right?
Right.
You're kind of an anomaly. You have to be this superwoman who does it all, has it all, doesn't stop, won't ever stop to be a female CEO. It might actually, probably is, off-putting to a lot of women, young women, say, who might have thought, yeah, okay, I want to be a female CEO. You know, you look up, you see these exceptional women, to what extent they've been personified as almost a freak of nature is something to investigate. But it's also very counterproductive for younger women who are looking up, looking at the female role models.
Yeah, I think also on that one, they love the fall from grace moment.
Oh, yes.
The media, they love it. They put these they'll climb them all the way up, which I think is one of the reasons why a lot of women find it difficult to stay in the limelight and stay as successful as they can be in comparison to male, because they are scrutinized and put on a pedestal. But then as soon as they decide something that the media decides is not what they wanted, the fall from grace happens. For example, with Bumble, when Whitney Heard decided to step down as CEO after creating an extremely successful company, that's not what the headlines were. It was just like, oh, she can't do it anymore.
Which, I remember reading that. Yeah. I can't, what was the headline? It was really negative. It made it sound like she wasn't coping. Basically,
she's not coping with the competition and being pushed out by the board and all of this kind of stuff. And it's like,
right.
No, she created a successful company.
I happen to Elon Musk daily. You know, I think even like there's been some companies, I think it's Away, the luggage brand, their CEO had some controversy around comments she had made about working practices or something, immediately cancelled. Like, it's just the shocking fall from grace. But then again, you see male CEOs, like,
with male leaders, Trump still around. That fall from grace is
stronger than ever. Yeah.
Elon Musk, this guy cannot fall from grace, however bad it goes.
There's so much more lenience the public has for that. And it's almost common. Like, we're laughing because it's funny the way that they mess up. But when women do it, it's shocking.
I mean, he has like 100 lives, Trump.
I get rid of him. He's like a cockroach. Nuclear.
Yeah. It really is, isn't it? Yeah, don't get me started on Trump, honestly. We'll be here for another 10 hours.
Back to finance.
Let's get back to finance. What impact do you think and do you hope that the pink chip will have on promoting gender diversity and inclusion in the workplace? And what do you want to see it as a year, 2 years, 3 years hence?
So pink chip itself as a company, we would like to see more indices, more proof points, more education, more data showcasing that this is not just a US-based issue and problem to solve, but a global one.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to launch more indices and even financial tools and financial products across the world. This is maybe not just
the US. Yeah. You were thinking Europe, UK,
Australia, even in the Asia, like the Asia Pacific, you know, everywhere, like the bias against women is global and it's not going away anytime soon. So I think we need to prove and show with data to businesses, investors and men that this needs to change, and it's not economical and it's not just a moral failure, but it's a financial failure across the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we really want a pink chip to be as a leader in terms of this type of product, but also as a thought leader. So being able to use our data to then tell more stories about incredible female leaders, the value of female leadership, how can companies promote women internally and retain women, and use the data and the product to have a bigger conversation about female leadership in general. You know, like I said before, obviously changing investor behavior and volume traded in female-led companies is a big KPI for us, but so is seeing more female leaders, period, or more gender diversity on boards. And what I think is going to be really interesting, what we're excited for, is to start rolling out more index products for different markets and seeing how they compare. Because the situation, the context is totally different from a cultural and legislation point of view, say in Australia versus the US versus the UK, and starting to develop and share some insights that are regional and allowing us to talk about what we can learn from each other. What could an Australian business learn from one in, I don't know, Finland, and vice versa, and start to open up that as well, because that's not really being done. There's really no comparative data around this. There's a company called Equileap that does a really good job of investigating gender within companies, but in terms of tracking their financial performance, no one's really doing that. Yeah.
Really powerful. Really powerful. So tell me about the type of investor that would typically be interested in this, or have you had any feedback from investors who've reached out to you since the launch? What have they said?
Had quite a bit, actually. Well, so we launched the index, well, the company list, on Europe's largest investing app, DEHERO. In the first 2 weeks, we had over 14,000 users investing in the Pinkchip company list.
Amazing.
Amazing in 2 weeks.
Wow.
So it just shows that it's there.
Yeah.
And it's powerful, and people are, when delivered the information and delivered the statistics, you know, will act. And this company has over 70% is male users, for example. Mm-hmm. So that shows that it's there and it's possible. It's clear that it has a track and it can go forth and make a change. Mm-hmm. And that's just within one investment app.
And that's individual private investors as well. Mm-hmm. Like we've also had a fair bit of interest from institutional investors and bigger financial firms, other brokerage platforms. So there's been quite a bit of interest in it since it had launched on International Women's Day, which is great. Mm-hmm. And I think it's important that it appeals to both, that it appeals to the average person who's, you know, just interested in trading and maybe wanting to invest a bit of their money, all the way up to your very large institutional investor managed funds type of situation. So it's been cool to have some conversations at both end of that spectrum.
Yeah, I bet. If I wanted to go in today to invest into the Pinkchip, how do I do that? How can I start to invest?
So there's two options. If you're US, EU-based, you're able to invest directly via DEHERO. They are listed as singular stocks. So you kind of pick the particular company.
Yeah. Okay. It's really big in Europe. So if you're in Europe and you have a smartphone, you can download their app and access the Pinkchip top list and invest in the individual securities. Mm-hmm. You could also do that if you're in the US or the UK and you invest through a platform that allows you to access individual holdings in the US market. Mm-hmm. You could also just go to pinkchip.org, look at the list of companies. We're really transparent. We publish the whole set and invest in them individually. We are talking to partners and working out ourselves about how we make Pinkchip itself one investable product, so that you invest in Pinkchip once rather than having to pick your individual holdings.
Yeah.
So that's what we were working on. But yeah, that's the short answer. It depends on where you live.
It depends on where you are. But for example, in time, you might partner up with Free Trade in the UK. They're an investment platform app. They have an app. Once the Pinkchip is an actual product, I could just invest via Free Trade as an example.
That's the dream.
Exactly. Yes.
That's the dream. That's where you're going, which is fantastic.
So if someone from Free Trade is listening,
We'll reach out to them. We'll say hello.
Yeah. The big dream is, creating multiple ETFs, enabling people to invest directly. But at the moment, they are just individual holdings.
Okay.
but legally you are only required to showcase the top 10 of an index. We show every single one, all 44.
Okay, good. Transparency, you like that. So we're coming up to the last question. I want to say thank you to both of you, Sam and Grace, for sharing as much as you have. I think you can tell by my excitement how much I absolutely love this. I am so happy that you didn't give up, Sam, both of you and Grace. You kept going and here you are. And the traction, the engagement in such a short period of time, I think is testament to how timely this is, how very important. And obviously this index will make money for investors. So thank you. I think your contribution is enormous. And I will have you back on to tell me how you're getting on in about 12 months' time with all your future plans. So what advice would you give to companies that aspire to be included in the Pink Chip Index?
Well, at the moment, you need a female CEO, so hire one of those.
Yeah, most of them need to start there, I think, yeah, given the stats around that.
They need to work back from there, right? If they don't know what they need to do, think about
it. Point a woman. And like we said before, retention, invest in women and take it seriously and look at how you're hiring and retaining people in your workforce. I think that's the big thing.
Of course. Yeah. But also, like, you know, if it seems that it's a company that we may have missed in our huge, huge, giant Excel spreadsheet, by all means, message us. We want to be able to create more and more indices with more and more criteria and all obviously focusing on female leadership. But, you know, maybe in the future that doesn't only include the CEO, it's also the C-suite or the board. Mm-hmm. There's so much more opportunity to grow and so much more opportunity to include more and more companies that are focusing on female leadership or including or being equitable and housing equality within their company.
Amazing. If listeners want to connect with you, if they want to find you online, how can they do that?
Our website is pinkchip.org. Instagram is pinkchipofficial. We are on LinkedIn as well as Pinkchip. We also, if you go to our website, you can contact us directly. We also have a sign-up page for anyone that wants to get updates on what we're doing. It's just in the contact us section of the website.
Actually, one last thing I'll add, just to go back to your last question. Yeah, I think one also tangible thing to do other than appointing women to positions of C-suite leadership is also look at things like the Women Empowerment Principles from UN Women. They're a really actionable set of guidelines as to how to improve gender diversity and equality and equity within an organization. There's tons of signatories already. It's a great community and set of resources for, like I said before, attracting and retaining female talent. And I think UN Women have put a lot of effort into making that a really robust framework. So start there as well. If you're not ready to appoint a female CEO, making some changes into how your organization structures and is run along the Women Empowerment Principles is a really great place to start too.
Yeah, enabling your company to be able to grow women within its walls and also change maybe some ideas and some internal functions is definitely a good place to start if you're not hiring at the moment.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you so much for having us. This has been a really lovely conversation.
Of course. I listen to your podcast a lot, so it's great.
You're one of my avid listeners. Thank you both. We will catch up very soon.
Indeed. Thank you.
Thank you for joining me today. If you would like to connect with me, you can find me online at Join the Purse, or you can subscribe to our newsletter, jointhepurse.substack.com. Until next time, goodbye.